The Curse of the Pharaoh by Arthur Scoley.
Death shall come. Death shall come. Death shall come on swift wings to him who disturbs this tomb and the sleep of the Pharaoh.
We are down in the tomb of the Egyptian Pharaoh Tutankhamun. The year is 1343 BC, near the end of March, and you've arrived during the closing part of the long burial ceremony. It's stifling hot and dark in these four dugout rooms. Just a few oil lamps reflect in the eyes of the priests and on the gilded doors of the shrine before us in the burial chamber. Beyond the burial chamber, and now sealed beyond a plastered wall, is the treasure chamber. An hour ago, the dead pharaoh's servants, who headed the long procession from Thebes here to the Valley of the Kings, brought through some of the caskets of gold and jewels, statues, intricately modelled boats, and the royal chariot, all of which the soul of Tutankhamun will need in its journey to the next world.
Thy hand reaches beyond the horizon, O Pharaoh. Thou shalt set out on thy way. Thou shalt see the gods.
Now the priests are concentrating on sealing the doors of the golden shrine. Inside that shrine, one within the other, are three more shrines. Inside those is the large stone coffin. Inside that are three more gold body-shaped coffins. And inside those, mummified, elaborately dressed and jeweled, lies the body of the young pharaoh.
Thy flesh I have given unto thee. Thy bones have I kept for thee. Thou art set in order.
The final golden shrine door is now closed, bolted, sealed. In the passage before it, the priests place seven magic orbs. The pharaoh will use these two on his journey.
Thou shalt change into a living spirit.
Thou shalt cross in the ferry boat
and sail on the flood waters.
And thy life begin anew.
Now we've come down the dark corridor, up 16 stone steps into the dazzling March sun. In the blue sky above the rocky valley, two hawks circle. Down here, the mosquitoes are busy. That noise you can hear is rubble being poured into the tomb by a long queue of workmen. The corridor is now full of rocks, and the final doors are sealed on it. Now, they've almost filled up the stairway. The priest's eyes gaze intently into the faces of the silent crowd. Among them, they know, thieves have watched that gold being taken down. One final magical protection they can give Tutankhamun so that he can go on, uninterrupted, into the next world? A solemn, terrible curse on any intruder.
He who trespasses on thy tomb,
the sun god shall punish him.
He who injures thy possessions,
the great god will judge him.
He who violates thy domain,
his soul shall be destroyed forever.
Death shall come on swift wings to him who disturbs the sleep of the Pharaoh.
Death shall come! Death shall come! Death shall come!
How well would the curse protect Tutankhamun? Many knew of the Valley of the Kings, and the most powerful and rich of the Egyptian rulers were buried there with their belongings. Over the centuries, most of the tombs were entered, and even the bodies of the pharaohs themselves were robbed of their rich clothes and jewellery. Some thieves burrowed their way into the first chamber of Tutankhamun's tomb. What happened to them? Did the curse work? All we know is that after pulling some of the objects about, they got out again pretty quick and never went back. 150 years ago, archaeologists began to excavate, and one tomb after another was opened, and the riches taken away to stand in museums. But no one could find the tomb of Tutankhamun. Howard Carter had been looking for over 20 years, and in November 1922, he was on the point of giving up.
In the course of the season's work, we'd cleared a triangular area defined by the tombs of Ramses II, Meremptah, and Ramses VI, and came upon a series of workmen's huts. With the exception of the ground covered by these huts, we had now exhausted the whole of the area and had found no tomb. I was still hopeful, but we had now dug the valley for several seasons with extremely scanty results. Whether we should continue the work or try for a more profitable site elsewhere became a much debated question.
Two other factors in that debated question were that Lord Carnarvon, the wealthy patron who had financed the excavations for several years, was perhaps beginning to lose interest. He had returned to England with his wife and 20-year-old daughter, Evelyn. The other factor was that the time limit for the concession to work the site was about to run out. This was a depressing state of affairs on the morning of November the 4th, when Carter met his assistant.
What's the matter, Callender? Why aren't the men working?
Well, we're all waiting for you to arrive, sir. We've got something to show you.
Huh?
Over here. We've catalogued and cleared the huts as you instructed, and now we've dug beneath. And 3 feet down, see?
A stone slab.
And next to it, but further down...
Another one. Steps.
That's what we thought.
It's a sunken stairway entrance. It seems too good to be true, Callender. I begin to dare to hope. Back to work, men. But be careful. Be very careful.
Work continued through the whole of that day. Step succeeded step. 9, 10, 11. And there?
What do you make of it?
Definitely the upper part of the doorway, Callender. Plastered up. And sealed.
Still sealed. It's not been entered, then. What's on the seal, can you see?
Oh, I can't make it out in this light. Got the torch?
Thank you. It's certainly royal.
A royal tomb. This could be it, Callender. This could definitely be it.
It's too late to go on now.
Get the men to fill it all back in before dark. That's the only way to keep it safe.
Yes.
And you'd better get Adamson on all-night guard.
Right.
I must send a telegram to Lord Carnarvon.
The telegram arrived, but Lord Carnarvon had been warned by a fortune teller not to return to Egypt.
Ah, now I see you in the crystal, Lord Carnarvon. You are working in a small, dark room with others. But this is very strange. There are strangely dressed priests there as well. They're looking angry. They surround you. There are vivid flashes. Ah, now it is all fading.
That was the tomb you saw. I must say I did feel some strange influence while working there.
The place has been the focus of tremendous emotion. Lord Carnarvon, I can see disaster ahead. If I were you, I should make some public excuse and never go back to the tomb or Egypt.
But Carnarvon ignored the warning, and within a fortnight he was back in the Valley of the Kings with his daughter Evelyn and the uninvited world's press. By then, Carter and his team had cleared the stairway, opened that outer door, and got all the rubble out of the corridor. At a special ceremonial opening, while a large, excited crowd of experts, officials and reporters waited outside, Lord Carnarvon and his daughter, and Callender and Carter, paused before the second sealed door.
This was the day of days, the most wonderful I have ever lived through. With trembling hands, I made a tiny breach in the upper left-hand corner. Widening the hole a little, I inserted the candle and peered in. At first, I could see nothing, the hot air from the chamber causing the candle flame to flicker. But presently, as my eyes grew accustomed to the light, details of the room emerged slowly from the mist. Strange animals, statues,
and gold. Everywhere the glint of gold. Uncanny beasts and gilded statue sentinels guarding a further sealed door.
Carter! Carter!
What? Oh, Lord Carnarvon, I do beg your pardon.
Can you see anything, man?
Oh, yes. Yes. Wonderful things. Climb up here, if you will. Oh. And you, Lady Evelyn. Calendar, the torches, please.
Yes.
Yes. Now, look.
My God. My God, Carter, you've done it. This is an absolute treasure house.
Mr. Carter! Mr. Carter!
Well, what is it, Adamson? I thought I told you to say
that. He said a border cellar. There's no hole in them. There must be 50 of them.
I beg your pardon. Oh, get them into the marquee. Tell them I'll come out in 5 minutes. And Adamson, you better arrange for your camp bear to be brought down here again tonight. Right. We're going to need an all-night guard on this treasure. Oh, and keep those damn reporters well out. Here, Mrs. Carter, what have you found down
there? Can't take photographs, please.
Did you find the money?
Is there any gold left?
Is it the tat himself?
Gentlemen, ladies, one at a time, please.
Mr. Carter, tell us what you found. I mean, is it the tomb that you've been looking for?
Tutankhamun's tomb, very likely.
And the treasure, Mr. Carter, no one's good at that.
It looks as though it might have been disturbed, but there are still some wonderful things down there.
And when can we get the cameras inside?
Well, I'm afraid not for several weeks.
Mr. Carter, what about the curse of the pharaohs?
Aren't there any serious questions?
Hey, I'm serious, Mr. Carter. That's what our readers are asking. Everyone is interested in the curse. Those words, what are they? Death shall come on swift wings?
Yes, that's written on another tomb. I've seen nothing like it among the inscriptions on this one.
Don't you have any doubts about disturbing a pharaoh laid to rest for thousands of years? It sure brings me out in goose pimples. Oh. I tell you, God help anyone who breaks into my coffin. The curse of pharaoh will be nothing.
Grizzle Carnarvon has seemed to come already.
Look, my deadline's almost on me, Mr. Carter. To get back to this treasure, have you any idea? I mean, can you estimate at this stage the approximate value of what you found down there? That's what's going to get the presses rolling.
Egyptian treasure tomb, read all about it. Fabulous gold in Pharaoh's tomb.
From our Cairo correspondent, Valley of the Kings, by...
New page of history and seal.
Une grande découverte archéologique.
But in the midst of all the excitement, it was the curse that kept coming back into the headlines as Carter and his team penetrated into the burial chamber. Then, one hot day in March, as Lord Carnarvon and his daughter came out of the tomb...
Oh!
What is it, Father?
Oh, it's nothing, dear. Insect bite of some kind. Just a nip under my left eye.
Oh, yes, a mosquito bite by the look of it. We'll have it seen to as soon as we get in.
But next day, Lord Carnarvon cut the insect bite while shaving. An infection set in. Soon, he had a fever. Pneumonia rapidly developed, Lady Carnarvon was sent for from England, and their son, Henry, serving with the army in India, was given compassionate leave. But Lord Carnarvon rapidly got worse.
No, it's out of the question. I must finish what I've begun. I must finish.
Father?
I must. Oh, Evelyn, my dear, it's you.
I've sent for the specialist again, and Mother has arrived. Here she is, and Henry will be here tomorrow.
But Henry arrived too late. Lord Carnarvon was too delirious to recognise him. He died that night. The newspaper seized on the event.
Sudden death of Lord Carnarvon!
Lord Carnarvon is taught.
Lord Carnarvon dies of insect bite near Pharaoh's tomb he discovered.
Lord Carnarvon is mort.
And they also made much of other odd events.
El Trebly blackout as Lord Carnarvon dies!
A mysterious total power blackout over the whole of Cairo occurred last night at exactly the moment of the death of Lord Carnarvon. The electricity authorities cannot account for the 5-minute failure.
Amazing story of Lord Carnarvon's dog!
The curious coincidence of Lord Carnarvon's dog, which died in England at exactly the same time as his master in Cairo, has added to the speculation about the curse of the pharaohs. Shortly before the fatal moment, it is reported, the dog was heard howling inconsolably.
And popular interest in the curse would reach a peak of excitement later when the body of Tutankhamun himself was receiving X-ray scrutiny. The report on the face said,
"The skin is a greyish colour and is very cracked and brittle.
On the left cheek, just in front of the lobe of the ear, is a coloured depression resembling a scab.
Exactly. The same spot, the papers would excitedly remind readers, that Lord Carnarvon had received the fatal bite. There were other deaths.
Sudden death of Pharaoh, turn specialist!
Benedict, head of the Department of Egyptian Antiquities at the Louvre, died suddenly today, shortly after leaving the tomb of Tutankhamun. The cause of death is thought to be a stroke, brought on by the stifling heat in the Valley of the King.
The team worker dies!
The death has occurred of Arthur C. Mace, a member of the team now excavating the sensational tomb of Tutankhamun. Mr. Mace, assistant keeper of the Department of Antiquities.
Skipping Phil, X-ray expert dies!
Plans to X-ray the body of Tutankhamun have been delayed yet again, following the sudden death of Mr. Frederick Raleigh, the second X-ray expert to be appointed to the job. Mr. Raleigh was selected after the first appointee, Sir Archibald Douglas Reed, died before he could reach the tomb.
The legend of the curse became firmly established, and had all the makings of the story of the century. But not all of the people connected with Tutankhamun died. Many who were closely involved lived on, like
Alan Lucas, who chemically treated almost all the objects.
Dr. Derry of Cairo University, who analysed the pharaoh's mummy.
Pierre Lacaille.
Bernard Bruyere.
All present at the opening of the tomb and still actively at work in the Egyptology field well into their 80s. The death of Lord Carnarvon and the other sudden deaths has to be measured against all these who survived both the curse and the conditions.
The fact was that the actual working conditions in the tomb would have proved exacting for even the fittest people in the team. Lord Carnarvon's health had never been good, and his death, with those of the other two members of the team, can certainly and perfectly naturally be attributed to the hot, humid hours spent working in close conditions under arc lights. It should be pointed out that these same conditions did not, however, affect Callender and his assistants Hall and Hauser.
Nor did they seem to affect Lady Evelyn, or Adamson, the man who slept in the tomb regularly, on guard duty. Both were alive in their 70s. And what of the man who, surely, before all others, should have been doomed by any curse? The man who found, opened, and was to enter the tomb, Howard Carter himself.
It has been stated in various quarters that there are actual physical dangers hidden in Tutankhamun's tomb. Mysterious forces, called into being by some power, to take vengeance on whomsoever should dare to pass its portals. There was, perhaps, no place in the world freer from risks than the tomb. When it was opened, scientific research proved it to be sterile. Whatever foreign germs there may be within it today have been introduced from without.
But stories of the curse live on. Lord Carnarvon's son was not superstitious like his father, but he took note of some advice he was given over the phone.
You won't know me at all, Lord Carnarvon, but I'm a spiritualist and worked very closely with your father. In fact, at our seances, I acted as his medium.
Oh, how interesting.
I have now to tell you that 2 days ago, I had a message from your father.
Really?
He asked me to pass an instruction to you. On no account whatever should you ever step into the tomb of Tutankhamun again, under no circumstances. This is the express wish of your late father.
The new Lord Carnarvon never revisited the tomb. So is there a curse or not? Do we all want to believe in it because we love a creepy story? Did journalists make it up in order to sell the paper? It certainly sounds far-fetched to me. The idea of one of those mummies creeping up from behind with bandages all over it. Hello? Who's there? Okay. Who are you? Why are you covered in bandages? I suppose you cut yourself shaving. Why have you got your hands around my throat?
Death shall come. Death shall come. Death shall come.
The Curse of the Pharaoh was produced by Elizabeth Cleaver. And there we come to the end of this evening's nighttime broadcast for schools. ¶¶